There are lotteries. And then again, there are lotteries. In 1746, one man won a lottery, but this was a lottery that no one wanted to win. In today's episode of the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast, we'll look at the story of one unfortunate lottery winner. Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I'm Steve, your host. For those of you who love the short story genre, I recommend Shirley Jackson's most famous story, called The Lottery, first published in 1948. In this, families each year essentially draw straws, one by one, until Wicker Man-esque, one is sacrificed to ensure the gods give a good harvest. It is a brutally chilling tale, and I'll put the link to this story in today's show notes to my YouTube short story channel where it features. But our story begins in the land of whiskey-guzzling, Scotland. After the death of childless Queen Anne in 1714, Britain moved from a Stuart to a Georgian era, with that most tenuous of links to ensure a Protestant lineage. To this end, we see the growth of the Jacobite succession movement growing in popularity, with their belief in primogeniture, or that the direct firstborn lineage should inherit a parent's estate in preference to shared inheritance. With that in mind, there's a clear argument that the inheritance on Anne's death should have been passed to Charles II's relatives. After all, let's look back. Charles II had 8 bastard children with his mistresses, but none with his wife. So upon his death, his brother, James II, succeeded him. But not for long, as he had been deposed in what was described as the Glorious Revolution of 1688. To be replaced by his Protestant daughter, Mary II, and her husband, William of Orange. And the revolution took place because Catholic James gave birth to a male heir, James, who would displace Marian lineage. Fears of a Catholic lineage led to the uprising. But from a Jacobite point of view, there was an initial Jacobite uprising in 1715, led by James II's son, also called James, but this was quickly quelled. But from 1715 to 1745, Jacobite sympathies and antipathy continued to bubble underneath British society in very much divided opinion. Expressing your views for either side caused many arguments and would ruin many friendships over the years. It's here we introduce the main player of the story. On the 31st of December, 1720, we see the birth in Rome of Charles, Edward, Louis, John, Sylvester, Maria, Casimir, Stuart. But as popular mythology remembers him, Bonnie Prince Charlie. He was the grandson of Charles II's brother, James II, so for the Jacobean cause, here was a clearer argument for a rightful restoration, for the second time, of the Stuart monarchy, and politically, more importantly, a return of Catholicism to Britain. In 1745, Charlie travelled to France to take part in a planned invasion with a vast fleet, with the plan to restore the monarchy to his father, and it probably would have succeeded. However, the fleet was wrecked by fierce storms before it could invade. But this is when he enters into myth. In July 1745, he landed on the Isle of Eriskay, And we know Eriskay for the earlier podcast episode, Whiskey Galore. But anyway, with a dozen men, he landed there and made for the Highlands and to create an army from the clans. The rebellion was formally launched at Glenfinnan on the 19th of August. And just a month later, the majestic Bonnie Prince Charlie and his 2,400 men marched into the capital, Edinburgh, and took over the city. Although the formidable castle remained in government hands in a siege position. Charlie's timing had been impeccable, for the bulk of British troops were in Flanders, fighting in the War of Austrian Succession. And Charlie fought his first battle at Preston Pans, near the Firth of Forth. Sir John Cope had 3,000 to 4,000 men available, although they were inexperienced. At night, the Jacobites navigated marshy grounds so that they were on Cope's army flanks. And although Cope's army had time to turn and face the attack, the Highlanders charged, causing panic amongst the government soldiers, and the battle was over within 15 to 30 minutes. Deserted by his gunners, the artillery commander, Lieutenant Colonel Whiteford, left the battlefield unharmed after his life was spared by Steward of Invernail. Cope and 450 survivors reached Berwick-upon-Tweed at the border the next day. The Highlanders' charge was indeed a fearsome thing to face, as it had been seen at the Battle of Killiecrankie in 1689, and it could swing battles in Highland favour. After the Battle of Preston Pans, the Highlanders gained momentum and troops. The government reviewed the battle with Sir John Cope as to how to counter this charge. The rebellion was now being taken seriously. Mid-October, two French ships arrived with money and weapons, but the momentum gained was crippled for the next 6 weeks by a debate on how to proceed, and this was between Charlie, his main advisor Lord Murray, and the Jacobean Council. In response, the government recalled the Duke of Cumberland, son of George II, and 12,000 experienced troops from Flanders. The Jacobites marched south. Derby, Manchester, Preston. But the anticipated gain of troops didn't materialise how the Jacobites wanted it to. With the gathering strength of the government army, the Jacobites headed back over the border and up to the Highlands, slowly losing momentum, troops and will, fighting a rearguard battle on Falkirk along the way. It all culminated near Inverness with the last battle ever fought upon British soil. And this was on the 16th of April, 1746, the Battle of Culloden. The battle itself was a testament to the evolving nature of warfare during the 18th century. The Jacobite forces, largely comprising of Highland clansmen, relied on traditional tactics and weaponry, including broadswords and targes, a type of shield. In contrast, the government troops were equipped with muskets and bayonets, and employing disciplined formations that favoured firepower over close combat. The outcome was a decisive victory for the government troops, as their well-drilled soldiers repelled the Jacobean charge, inflicting heavy casualties and forcing their retreat. The battle only lasted an hour and was essentially a rout. In nearby Inverness, Cumberland emptied the jails that were ironically full of people imprisoned by being Jacobite supporters and replaced them with the captured Jacobites themselves. Prisoners were then taken south to England to stand trial for high treason. Many were held in hulks on the Thames or at Tilbury Fort, and in jails and places like Carlisle and York. And this is when the story takes a twist for these prisoners. With so many, the government didn't have the resources to try them all, but they also wanted to make an example, so they instigated a lottery, as we see from the following example from the 400 prisoners held at Carlisle Jail. In September 1746, 5 months after the battle, with jails full, it was explained to the prisoners that if they were to admit their guilt, they could enter a lottery in batches with 19 other prisoners. The one that loses would be held accountable for the other 19. The other 19 would be transported. Inevitably, all the prisoners joined the lottery. They knew that if the inevitable trial came their way, they would be executed for treason. And it was into this that 20 men watched as 20 pieces of paper, with one dotted, were dropped into a hat, and they took turns to step up, one by one, and draw paper. 1, 2, 3, blank. The fourth, with a sheen of sweat, with a trembling hand, reached in and pulled out the paper, opened it, blank, and so on it went. It was only when the Oxford-educated Reverend Thomas Coppock, the Jacobite's reverend's turn came, he pulled out the winning ticket that no one had wanted to win. For form's sake, he had a show trial, but having already admitted guilt, it took 2 minutes. He was sentenced to death. The judge pronounced sentence. You're to be hanged by the neck, but not till you're dead, for you're to be cut down alive, your privy parts cut off, your bowels taken out and burned before your face, your head severed and your body divided into 4 parts, and those to be at the king's disposal, and the Lord have mercy on your soul. The 18th of October 1746 saw Coppock dragged on a black hurdle from Carlisle Castle to the gallows on Harrowby Hill overlooking the town. He kept his dignity and delivered a highly treasonable 7-minute sermon and suffered the fate reserved for high treason of being hung, drawn and quartered. No one was hung, drawn and quartered after 1746, and there was never again a drawing of lots, but that was scant consolation for the unfortunate Thomas Coppock, the winner of the worst lottery prize of all time. The aftermath of the Battle of Culloden was equally significant. The defeat of the Jacobites led to a brutal crackdown on Highland culture and traditions. The British government implemented a series of punitive measures, including the suppression of Highland dress, the disarmament of clans, and the suppression of the Gaelic language and customs. These measures aimed to weaken the power structure that supported the Jacobite cause, effectively transforming the social and cultural landscapes of the Highlands. Furthermore, the battle accelerated the process of integrating Scotland into the United Kingdom. The defeat of the Jacobites diminished the threat of further uprisings and solidified the authority of the Hanoverian monarchy. Scotland underwent a period of economic and political transformation, aligning its interests more closely with those of England and Wales. The Act of the Union in 1707 had already merged the Scottish and English parliaments, but with the Battle of Culloden solidified the political unity of the two nations. After his flight from battle, Charles Edward Stuart made his way towards the Hebrides, accompanied by a small group of supporters. By the 20th of April, Charles had reached Arisaig on the west coast of Scotland. After spending a few days with his close associates, he sailed for the island of Benbecula and the Outer Hebrides. From there, he travelled to Scalpe, off the east coast of Harris, and from then made his way to Stornoway. For 5 months, Charles crisscrossed the Hebrides, constantly pursued by government supporters and under threat from local lairds who were tempted to betray him for the £30,000 upon his head. During that time, he met Flora MacDonald, who famously aided him in a narrow escape to Skye. Finally, on the 19th of September, Charles reached back to Arisaig, where his party boarded two small French ships which ferried them to France. He never returned to Scotland. He died in Rome in 1788, aged 67. And I'll leave today's episode with a touching story of repaid chivalry. Back in the Battle of Culloden, the artillery commander, Lieutenant Colonel Whiteford, returned the favour of having his life saved at the Battle of Prestonpans by Stuart of Invernail by obtaining a royal pardon for the captured Stuart. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. It was nice to dig back into a little bit of Scottish history. And if you want to have more episodes, you can become a subscriber and find the episodes that are already up there. But if not, it won't be long till the next episode up. I've been Steve. Till next time. Bye-bye.